The next item on the agenda is item number 10, Chris Clifford, 07-2124. Mr. Nykerk?
Yes, sir.
Afternoon.
Mr. Clifford is requesting authorization to retain three 16-foot-wide riprap breakwaters that have been constructed in a manner that does not conform with the terms and conditions of a previous permit. He seeks authorization to retain three breakwaters measuring 70 feet, 83 feet, and 110 feet in length instead of the 50 feet in length that were constructed and utilizing different construction techniques and materials than originally authorized. He also seeks authorization to construct a fifth breakwater with a combination of precast concrete barrier with quarry stone placed along the channelward side of the barrier adjacent to his property, situated along the York River and the mouth of Carter Creek in Gloucester County. The project is located along Blundering Point, a spit of land that is situated along the York River at the mouth of Carter Creek. The York River borders the property along the southwest facing shoreline, and an extensive marsh and Carter Creek are located along the northeast side of the property. Aerial photograph of the project site. Arrow is fixed Blundering Point and about the approximate location of the project. Across the river, across the York River, you'll see Cheatham Annex. The York River Bridge, the Coleman Bridge, is about 6 miles downstream. Mr. Clifford received a permit from VMRC to construct four 50-foot-long riprap breakwaters along the York River side of this parcel in 1998. The expiration date of that permit was June 30th, 2001. This is an aerial from the 2002 Vigen series that we use quite often. Only the two upriver breakwaters are visible in the aerial photograph taken in 2002, indicating that these two breakwaters were the only breakwaters completed prior to the June 30, 2001 expiration date of the permit. After receiving a report that heavy equipment was working along the Clifford shoreline, we reviewed the permit documents and available photography and discovered that work had been conducted and was apparently continuing several years after the expiration of the permit. We contacted Mr. Clifford and conducted a site inspection on June 6th of this year. This is the plan view drawing from the 1997 permit. I've added the notations in there. During the site visit, we noted that three riprap breakwaters had been constructed and a fourth breakwater was under construction at the site. All of the breakwaters are approximately 16 feet wide, and the locations of the completed breakwaters appear to generally conform with the permit. One of the breakwaters is approximately 50 feet long as permitted. That's the most upriver breakwater that I've got in yellow there. The other two completed breakwaters are 70 feet and 83 feet in length. Additionally, a fourth breakwater, which has not yet been completed, is comprised of a row of timber pilings measuring approximately 110 feet in length. We also noted the breakwaters had been constructed with a mixture of quarry stone and concrete block rather than all quarry stone that had been specified in the permit, and also that a short row of concrete blocks had been installed adjacent to the upstream breakwater. This is the cross-sectional drawing of the breakwaters from 1997 permit. This is a ground shot of the most upstream breakwater. You can see the concrete blocks are kind of octagonal cylinders. And then this is the short row of concrete blocks that was installed adjacent to that upriver breakwater. Mr. Clifford stated during the site inspection that the blocks were placed as a test and that they were intended to be removed. Recent aerial photographs indicate that while the concrete blocks have been removed from this area, it appears a new riprap structure has now been constructed between the third and the fourth breakwaters. The top aerial is from May 15th of this year. This is the short row of blocks that have been removed in the picture at the bottom, which was from September 13th, but a new structure appears to have been constructed right here, which would be here in this picture. This is a ground shot of the third and fourth breakwaters. The one in the background here is the row of timber pilings that Mr. Clifford explained. He installs those first, allows the tombola of sand to fill in behind that, and then he uses that to access the site to put stone out over top. Therefore, although Mr. Clifford received a BMRC permit to construct four riprap breakwaters totaling 200 feet adjacent to his property in 1998, only two of the breakwaters were constructed prior to the expiration of the permit. Three of the breakwaters are longer than originally authorized, currently totaling over 300 feet, and the construction technique and materials used varied from that authorized. As noted earlier, a riprap structure also appears to have been installed or added between the third and fourth breakwaters since our notice to comply. This is an aerial taken in May of this year. On June 11th, the Cliffords were served a notice to comply which directed removal of the unauthorized structures by August 14th of 2007. As an alternative, the notice also provided the Cliffords an option of submitting an after-the-fact application to seek authorization to retain all or a portion of the illegal structures. The notice directed submittal of the after-the-fact application by July 15th of 2007. However, since there was a delay in serving the notice, we informed Mr. Clifford that we would extend the deadline for submittal of the application to July 23rd of 2007. As of September 3rd, the illegal structures had not been removed, and we had not received an after-the-fact application to retain the unauthorized breakwaters. Accordingly, we concluded that Cliffords did not wish to avail themselves the opportunity to submit an after-the-fact application, and we sent the Cliffords a letter on September 10th directing their appearance at a restoration hearing scheduled for today. On September 17th, Mr. Clifford contacted our office and stated that he had submitted the application back in July. We informed him we never received the application, and we suggested he go ahead and resubmit it. On September 21st, Mr. Clifford submitted a new copy of his after-the-fact application. That application was not accompanied by a statement explaining why the work was to conducted without the necessary permit as directed in the notice to comply. Nevertheless, today's hearing is to consider the after-the-fact application rather than the restoration hearing. This past Friday, we did receive a letter from Mr. Clifford explaining his actions, and that was the letter I was going to hand out at the beginning of this. I've got two letters, or one letter from Mr. Clifford, copies of it. And then we also just yesterday received comments from the game department. The after-the-fact application seeks authorization to retain and complete the three illegally constructed breakwaters, as well as authorization to construct a fifth breakwater along the shoreline. The fifth breakwater is designed to be constructed with a precast 4.5-foot tall concrete barrier with a 4.5-foot wide by 3.5-foot tall wedge of granite riprap installed on the channelward face of the barrier. As with the other breakwaters, no beach nourishment is proposed to be placed landward of the breakwaters. Instead, Mr. Clifford proposes to allow the natural drift of sand along the shoreline to create the tombola landward of the breakwater. This is the plan view drawing that accompanied the after-the-fact application. In yellow is the breakwater that was approximately 50 feet and built prior to the permit expiration. The two red breakwaters are both longer than authorized. The orange breakwater is the one that consists of just a row of pilings at this point, and the green breakwater is the structure that's proposed to be constructed with the concrete barrier and wedge of stone along the channelward face. This is a cross-sectional drawing of the fifth breakwater, the most downstream breakwater. It is proposed to use a precast concrete barrier, as I mentioned, with a wedge of stone. He also proposes to place oyster aquaculture bags on racks along the landward side of the precast barrier wall. The oyster bags would be at an intertidal elevation. He indicates the bags would be relocated to the ends of the breakwater as the sand tombola forms landward of the breakwater. The length of the individual concrete barrier structures is not provided, and the size of the riprap is not stated. This is an aerial photo, again taken last month. You can see the shoreline actually is curved rather than straight, as depicted in the plan view drawings. The original application did show that curve to the shoreline. The Cliffords are principal owners of Riverworks, Inc., shoreline contracting company experienced in breakwater construction. Mr. Clifford apparently constructed the breakwaters himself. No other contractors were involved. The project may encroach on private oyster planting ground leased by a Ms. Corrine Gentile. She was notified of the proposal, but we've not received any comments. No one has objected to the project in response to the public notice that was placed, nor have either of the adjoining property owners objected to the project. VIMS notes that certain information is lacking in the application, including the size of the stone to be used in the breakwater and whether the concrete has any exposed rebar. Although there appears to be an adequate supply of sand along the shoreline, they still recommend the breakwaters be nourished, and they recommend that filter cloth be used under the breakwaters. Finally, they note that there are limited details concerning the fifth breakwater, which utilizes an atypical design consisting of a concrete barrier with a wedge of stone along the channelward face. Since there is little information available concerning the effectiveness and integrity of this design, VIMS recommends a more typical stone breakwater be constructed. If the fifth breakwater is constructed as proposed, they recommend that a detailed monitoring plan be required. The Department of Conservation and Recreation determined that the project will not adversely affect any of their programs, but noted that a water quality impact assessment must be filed in accordance with the Chesapeake Bay Preservation Act requirements. We also received comments from the Department of Game and Inland Fisheries. Those are just handed out. They note the presence of two state threatened species, but don't anticipate the project will adversely affect those species. They do recommend a time of year restriction from February 15th to June 15th to minimize impacts on anadromous species, and they recommend several erosion and sediment control practices. No other state agencies have commented on the project. The Gloucester County Wetland Board determined that a wetland permit was not required since there is no beach nourishment proposed and therefore no direct impact on wetlands within their jurisdiction. Staff believes the construction of breakwaters along this shoreline and point is a reasonable approach to address erosion, as evidenced by our issuance of a permit in 1998. We are very concerned, however, by the applicant's failure to comply with the terms and conditions of the earlier permit. He continued to work on the structures long after the permit had expired, and the design and length of the breakwaters differed significantly from the specifications in the permit. Had Mr. Clifford requested an extension of the permit prior to permit expiration, it most likely would have been administratively approved. Additionally, had a modification been sought to change the design, materials, or construction techniques, the permit could have been modified, provided the revisions were determined to be acceptable. The failure of an experienced shoreline contractor to secure a permit extension and modification illustrates a blatant disregard for the permit process. Mr. Clifford also failed to submit a complete application and only recently provided a statement explaining why the work was completed without the necessary permit as directed in the notice to comply. We often require that structures such as breakwaters and groins be nourished with clean sand to minimize impacts to downdrift properties. Adding sand to the system allows sand to bypass the structures and continue its natural longshore transport to beaches downdrift of the site. In this case, there appears to be an abundant supply of sand in the nearshore area where the breakwaters are proposed, and the property is on a point of land, so there should be no downdrift or no impacts to downdrift properties. Like VIMS, we also question the long-term integrity and potential effectiveness of the fifth breakwater. Although there could be some value in studying an alternative and perhaps more cost-effective breakwater design, we do not believe that such a long structure on the terminal end of a breakwater system is the most appropriate site to conduct a study. We believe a more typical breakwater comprised entirely of riprap with a minimum size of Class II armor stone would be more appropriate. We understand that being a shoreline contractor with access to heavier equipment affords the applicant the opportunity to conduct the work as time permits. We believe, however, that the extended time period for construction along this shoreline likely increases the adverse impacts associated with construction due to the prolonged period of heavy equipment traversing the intertidal area. Every effort should be made to complete this project in a timely manner. Accordingly, we recommend approval of the project with the following special conditions. The fifth breakwater must be constructed on filter cloth utilizing all riprap with a minimum of Class II stone used as armor stone. Piling should not be used to create a soldier pile breakwater prior to creation of the riprap breakwater. The pilings used in the fourth breakwater must either be removed or cut flush with the sediment prior to the placement of riprap to construct the breakwater. The fourth breakwater shall also be constructed on filter cloth and entirely of riprap with a minimum of Class II stone used as the armor material. The fourth breakwater shall be completed or the existing piles removed within 1 year. If beach nourishment is desired to provide construction access and to enhance the breakwaters, separate permits must be obtained from the Gloucester County Wetland Board and the Commission. The permit shall provide a detailed plan for planting of the sand tombolos that will be created landward of the breakwaters with appropriate wetland vegetation, and the riprap that has been placed between the third and fourth breakwater shall be removed within 30 days. With these special conditions, we believe the project would be consistent with all of the factors contained in Section 28.2-1205A of the Code of Virginia. Accordingly, we recommend approval of the after-the-fact request with the assessment of triple permit fees as provided for in Section 28.2-1206D of the Virginia Code. Furthermore, we recommend the Commission consider conditioning their approval on the applicant's agreement to pay an appropriate civil charge in lieu of further enforcement action. Be happy to answer any questions. I know that's a long evaluation.
Mr. Neikert. Mr. Tankard.
Just a chronological question here. You sent a notice to comply on June 29th. At that point, there were two or three breakwaters.
There were, at the time of the notice to comply, this is essentially what the project looked like here. There were two breakwaters. These two appear to be constructed based on the aerial photographs from 2002. They appear to have been built prior to the original expiration of the permit.
Right.
This one is slightly longer than permitted. This breakwater was built after the 2002 aerial photographs, and this breakwater was built after that time period. So both of those were constructed after the expiration of the original permit.
But I guess, and then my follow-up question is, you sent a notice to comply, and then there was yet another breakwater?
Well, there wasn't another breakwater. There was, it's difficult to pick up here, some stone that had been placed over here appears to have been placed here. It's higher, or it's not as good a shot there. Let me go back. Let me end show.
There you are.
This is that row of small concrete blocks that when we met on site, he indicated would be removed. They have been apparently removed based on the September picture down here, but they appear to have been placed right here.
Are those the same? Excuse me.
Mr. Fox.
Are those the same blocks?
I don't know.
Riprap?
I don't know.
Almost looks like riprap from here, but hard to tell.
Mr. Schick?
The first three, the first two breakwaters, were they constructed in a conventional manner with armor bolt, or were they mixed with concrete? And were they?
There is some concrete in it. It's not broken up concrete. Mr. Clifford can explain. He told me when we were down there that a company that he deals with had used them to block some areas of stone off. I guess they were kind of octagonal, something on this range and about this long. Probably decent material. It's just different material than had been shown in the permit.
So
I don't believe there's any exposed rebar or anything like that in it.
So the weight factor would be equal to that of armor bolt?
Probably similar to armor stone, almost smaller.
And it was there pilings used in that? Those?
I understand he did use the pilings to create the tombola so that he could access the site with the breakwaters.
Were those creosote pilings?
I think it was a variety of pilings that, you know, they
included creosote items?
Probably.
Mr. Holland?
Your recommendation, staff recommendation to remove, is that the bottom picture that's circled in red?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Fox?
So, given that the original two that he put in were approved, permitted, for the moment, for my discussion, I'll excuse the additional length on one of them. How many separate violations would you say there are beyond that?
Well, there are two other breakwaters installed. There were 50-foot long breakwaters that were permitted in that site. They just were not installed before the permit expired. And then what got installed was actually longer and in slightly different location than had also been previously reviewed.
And then we have the third thing that's circled in red.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so roughly three.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr. Schick.
Have you ever seen this method of construction where they put pilings in first?
No.
And
Mr.
has there been any follow-up on, has there been any comment from VIMS on, the soundness of this type of way of building these? I've never seen it myself either. So.
No. I think it's probably a situation where the typical homeowner couldn't do it because they wouldn't have access to the equipment that they'd need to do it. Mr. Clifford does have access to that. It's probably a very cost-effective way for him to do it because he doesn't have to haul sand in, and he can also access, you know, the site. I think that's probably another reason that it took so long to, you know, for this project to progress to this state.
Other questions? Thank you, Chip.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Clifford here, represented. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
You solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Would you like to address the commission?
I think Chip did a pretty good job of presenting what's happened at Blundering Point. I think that you have to think about several other things, okay? And I'm not real good with a clicker, but if you look at this picture, these breakwaters are in front of a 15-acre Alton of Flora Payton's marsh. They are not in front of my house. I do not have any breakwaters in front of my house. I did not build a beach in front of my house. This is an attempt to save that marsh. That's something that I think is critical to the resource that y'all are charged with protecting. As a contractor, I think about these things differently than you as a commission does. And I've been here all morning, and I've been listening, and I've been trying to understand what's happened here. I submitted an application, and let's be sure we understand this, for four breakwaters, 50 feet long, 50 feet apart, 8 years ago. I installed the first breakwater, which in this particular picture is the one closest to the boats, closest to the, in the top there, that circle, that oval. I installed that breakwater roughly 8 years ago. And that's all I did, because my thought at the time was that the adjacent shoreline to the west, my neighbors, the Greaves, are the greatest neighbors in the world. Their shoreline is eroding away, and it's coming to me. Okay? So I thought that the sand transport would be in my direction from the Greece shoreline and that it would probably fill that breakwater. And quite honestly, I thought that would be the end of it. What happened was that that breakwater filled in. You can see the cedar tree behind it. And basically, I built that breakwater too close to shore. So I built this dune around that cedar tree, and the dune proceeded to start filling in the marsh. And that's not what I intended to achieve. Okay? So the next breakwater, now that I knew I had a steady supply of sand, please understand, I have not hauled any sand onto this project. Zero. The next breakwater is a little further away from the shore, and it's a little bit shorter, the height, vertical elevation, shorter, so that hopefully I would not build up a backshore dune and pile it into the marsh. It filled, again, too much of a dune, too much going into the marsh. So I moved further offshore and increased my gap on the third breakwater. This is discretionary, gentlemen. This is what you were talking about earlier this morning. I firmly believe that I at no time was intending to hurt the environment or hurt the York River or do anything that was a negative. I'm simply trying to protect that marsh and watching progress through time. In other words, as I move down the shoreline, I'm changing my technique. Right? Third breakwater is a little bit longer and a little bit farther from the second one. Let me explain something so that you the mathematics of this. We sell these all day long on various rivers in the southern Chesapeake. Some of them have been as little as 40 feet long. Some of them have been 150 feet long. The ratio of breakwater to gap varies as well. So when we're doing a shoreline, I can say it's 500 feet of shoreline. I can suggest to the property owner that they do 550-foot breakwaters, 550-foot gaps, and we've treated 500 feet of shoreline. Or I can suggest to the homeowner that he do two 100-foot breakwaters, three 100-foot gaps, and we've treated the shoreline. Please notice that there's 50 feet less breakwater in the second scenario. What's going on here is I'm treating more shoreline with less breakwater as I move that way. My gaps are increasing. Okay? I'm not in the terms of my permit. Guilty as charged. Right? No doubt of that. Yes, I exceeded 3 years. Guilty as charged. But I'm waiting each time I build one of these structures for the sand to come to me. That is my road down the marsh. I cannot go across that marsh with heavy equipment. I hope you understand that the pilings issue. That structure far end to the east there is the Gloucester Banks Pier from Isabel. Okay? We have to go clean this stuff up. That's one of our jobs, is to go repair the docks, all right? So when I pull the stuff out of the river, I can either take it to the dump, throw it away, all right? Or what I've been doing is recycling it into these breakwaters. You'll notice that when the breakwater's done, there's no pilings evident. There is a picture. Some of the old pilings that I used on that breakwater. It's just a matter of I've got them, I'm a contractor, this is my means to create the tombola in order to get out on the beach with my heavy equipment with the rock. It's a method that's not available to the average homeowner, but it is to me. So that's what I do. The two circles, just so that you can understand something, the pile of rocks that has moved, that's the same. Those are the same rocks, the same ovals of concrete. The reason I moved them down the shoreline and put them in the lower picture is purely because I hope you're going to give me a permit to continue on with this. So that's just a place to put them until I can do that fourth breakwater. It happens to be functioning right now as to protect that little piece of marsh right there. But if you will permit me, I will go take them offshore and put them around those pilings, cut the pilings off, and that will be the end of the fourth breakwater. I'd also like for Chip to just say one thing, because I know you analyze these permits in terms of a lot of things, but public benefit is one of them. Okay? Chip made a statement to me on my beach to the effect that he is well served by these breakwaters, personally. And I'd like for Chip, if you remember that statement, to come on up here and repeat that, because it's very interesting.
You want me to come up?
Well, sure.
Okay.
I did tell Chris that. Told him, you know, I live on the creek. This is the point that's at the creek. All of the sand is moving and forming a bar, you know, around the backside. Told him I didn't think we'd have a problem permitting breakwaters at this site. In fact, we had permitted breakwaters at this site. I think it's a good site for breakwaters. And, you know, it helps me out as well.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
He's referencing a sandbar that I don't know how to go to the picture, but yeah. You had the sandbar out back.
Shows it.
That sandbar migrated down the Grieve shoreline, around Blundering Point, and into the creek. That is the Grieve's property migrating around my shoreline and into the creek. I believe that the breakwater system that I'm installing is slowing down that sand transport. And I believe that if I'm keeping the sand from going around there, Carter's Creek will stay open. Something to think about. Any questions?
I was going to ask the same thing. Any questions of the gentleman, Mr. Tankard?
My only question again is, you got this notice to comply on June 29th, and then we see another breakwater show up. I understand. So you're saying that you just wanted to deposit the rocks on the beach?
Are you talking about that pile of stone?
Yes.
I was asked to move that pile of stone. Okay. It was not part of my permit. It didn't need to be there. I will confess I do experiment with, I'm in the business. I wanted to see if these octagonal things would stand vertically. Right? It failed. I could have taken them backwards and put them in my yard. Right, I should have, but I carried them down to where the next breakwater is going to be. It wasn't an intent to build more structure. It was simply a place to lose them, to get rid of them. I'm not trying to harm anything by doing that.
Further questions? Mr. Schick.
Are you in general practice of using creosote pilings in construction?
No creosote pilings on at Blundering Point.
There are no creosote pilings used there.
In my recycling activity?
Yeah,
no.
Right. Okay.
No, these are all salt treated.
Further questions?
I have one.
Mr. McCluskey, then Mr. Tankard.
In your experience, I'm not speaking toward the violation, but how much success have you had over the years with this type of riprap with you? Have a break in between it rather than one long area?
What I've learned, I think that it is appropriate to some shorelines. That there are some situations where a shore parallel breakwater system is inappropriate. Mr. Giamatti earlier with Mrs. Havens, I thought that would be a complicated breakwater project because he would be doing just one in front of his own property. They work better as a system. Yorktown Beach has them, I believe. We've done them up in Windmill Point in series of 12, 15. So you need a long stretch of shoreline, and you need to create a system of breakwaters running along that shoreline, and then you must have the sand. If you don't have the sand, the system will not work.
May I follow up with that?
Yes, sir.
The Corps of Engineers a few years ago, maybe 10 years ago, used the same technique around Cape Henry. Do you have any idea how successful that's been? That was to try to save the lighthouse and the old weather station. Do you know how successful that was?
I do not know. I will say, like everything else, and there are no wizards. There are no geniuses. There are no people that think that we absolutely fully understand all of this. This is always a best guess and a best try. Isabel rearranged my thinking after 20 years in business. All of a sudden, I became aware that some of these structures that I thought were going to work, no way on earth. And I think New Orleans is the classic example of that situation where Mother Nature handed, you know, those people something that they're just, it's beyond us. We think we can design against it, but I don't know what happened at Cape Henry.
Well, I'm just interested in that type of construction, and
sure.
I believe this commission approved that similar construction over on Eastern Shore. And Dickie Foster's project.
I don't think it was one.
Yes. I wonder how that's making. I'm just curious.
I don't know.
The history after.
The ones at Yorktown did pretty well. The tops got knocked off of them, but the rock size was a little off. But they functioned. They worked. So I believe in it.
Okay. Mr. Tankard.
Point of clarification, do you want four breakwaters or five breakwaters?
There will be five in that picture when I'm all done.
Okay. Thank you.
And could I just address this oyster growing thing, this oyster growing breakwater? Are we considering that right now, Mr. Bowman, or is that for another meeting, the last breakwater?
It's for the same application, right? Okay. Yeah.
I really want to do this, and I understand that I've got a negative VIMS report, but the functional part of a breakwater is the offshore, the part that's attacked by the waves. That's going to be the same as any other breakwater I've ever built. In other words, you will have rocks that absorb the wave energy and dissipate it. The difference in what I want to do on the lee side is I want to grow oysters. And the reason I want to do that, it's not a commercial venture. I believe that when these tombolas are populated by that marsh that's creeping into them, that's where you're going to have strike. And I believe that the oyster in the bay will make its comeback from the shore outwards, from the marshes outwards. That's just a personal opinion. So I would love to have breakwaters that grow oysters, because I know there's a ton of strike on those other four. I just want to try for basically a complete living shoreline, not just growing grasses, but growing critters.
Further questions? Mr. Clifford, the dilemma that I'm confronted with as commissioner is it's my responsibility to ensure compliance with the laws of the Commonwealth of Virginia. We have tried to have you come into compliance from a permitting perspective numerous times. You and I have even had discussions, personal discussions, where I thought after our last discussion all the appropriate paperwork would be filed. You made the comment that you keep changing my technique. When you change techniques or change ways of doing business, it has to be permitted from the Commonwealth of Virginia's perspective. And I've got to say it, as a marine contractor, you've got to toe the line. You've got to set the example, the standard. Because if not you, then I don't know who else. That's the design, the aspects, the different things that have been discussed, there are those out there that have far more expertise than I do as far as what works and what doesn't as far as that design. You do, of course. You have more expertise than I do in that. But at the same time, in order to maintain or prevent chaos and people going and doing whatever they want to, nilly-willy up and down the shoreline, we have to maintain a strict permitting process. And without that, the system is gone. So that's my biggest concern, and the matter is before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Schick.
Yeah, we've had other contractors come up and want to do experimental techniques, and we've refused that. You know, state-owned bottom is not a personal experimental playground for anybody. There's no excuse for this. There's no excuse for somebody coming up and saying guilty is charged, thinking that getting permission is not important in trying to get forgiveness. That's not the business we're in. This technique hasn't been proven. It's not something that VIMS endorses, and it should be removed. And an appropriate breakwater system should be installed.
Well, you have staff recommendations in front of me, and I need you to frame, if that's a motion, I need you to frame.
Well, I'm just putting that out for discussion
table?
Right yeah. now.
Okay. Anyone else?
I just want, time after time, we get people coming up that have all kinds of excuses. There is no excuse for this. There is no excuse.
Mr. Tankard?
The staff recommendation is pretty lengthy. I think I might just say I move to accept staff recommendation with regard to this application.
Staff recommendations includes a civil charge as well.
Consideration
of a civil charge in lieu of further enforcement activity. Would that be part of your motion?
Yes.
And if so, how much?
That's a good question.
Matrix is in front.
May I suggest?
Mr. Fox?
Would be my guess.
I suggest $3,600 being two violations at $1,800 each. That would be minor, environmental, and major, whatever the other coordinate is.
Compliance.
I accept that.
Motion made by Mr. Tankard to accept staff recommendation, $3,600 civil charge in lieu of further enforcement actions. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Dr. McConaughey. Further discussion?
I do have some.
Mr. Schick?
I've been told that there are creosote pilings that have been used.
There?
Yes.
I don't know. I didn't pay attention to that when I was down there. All I know is that they are, pilings that he's pulled off of a site somewhere else. Apparently the philosophy point here, whether it had 90 creosote piles in it or not, I don't.
I just think that it needs to be part of the motion, if you all wouldn't mind, that an inspection of these needs to be done. If they're creosote pilings, they need to come out.
I'll accept that.
Yeah. Second.
Okay.
All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Nay.
No?
I'm still voting nay.
Okay. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is Ronald H. Horn, 062296. Yes.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, sir.
Mr. Ronald H. Horn requests after-fact authorization to retain 8-foot wide by 132-foot long open pile pier with flare landing and approximately 16-foot by 24-foot open-sided boathouse, a 12-foot by 13.5-foot L platform, and approximately 1,100-square-foot U-shaped floating dock adjacent to his property, situated along Williams Creek in King George County.